What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the CODACast. My name is Brian Bermudez, and I'm the host of the Craft of the Air podcast, the aviation podcast that really just expands your knowledge in each and every episode. Join me and my guest as we explore the untold world of aviation together. I'm so glad that you guys are tuned in for another episode. You know, I always try to find interesting people for this show and to have good guests on. And sometimes the harder you look for something, the harder it is to find. And it just so happens that I had this excellent student of mine in two classes. I had him in the last semester and this semester, and just stumbled upon this great person, someone that I wanted to introduce to the CODACast fan base. I'm introducing Charlie Gonzalez. Charlie, thank you so much for being on this episode of the CODACast.
Thank you for having me, man. It's really an honor. You have probably a ton of people that you could search for, people who are past their AMP program, actual mechanics, people who are further along in the program than me, but chose to have me on. So I really do appreciate the chance of being here.
Thank you, Charlie. And as you guys are going to listen and hear in this episode, this is going to be an episode of really inspiration. It's going to be a funny episode. It's going to encourage people. And I like Charlie's perspective. I like where he's coming from and where he's going in aviation and what's gotten him to this point in aviation maintenance and crossed his path with mine and going to show everybody that's listening. First things first, very quickly, today's episode of the CODACast is brought to you by Craft of the Air. Are you an A&P student? Need refreshers? Look no further than CRAM by CODA, consolidated reviews of aviation maintenance, consolidated tailored courses of your choice led by certified A&P subject matter experts. It's going to ensure you're fully prepared to excel in any aviation maintenance exam. With CODA, you can do just about anything with aviation maintenance training, consulting, general aviation maintenance in the New Jersey, New York City, tri-state area. CODA is a second you when you need it. It's your personal aviation assistant for anything in the field aviation. You guys are going to have to check out this website. It's www.craftoftheair.com. Again, that's www.craftoftheair.com and learn everything CODA can do for you. Craft of the Air, our craft is of the air. So now, this is a great episode, and I really been looking forward to meeting with Charlie today. Both of us have had a very busy week, Charlie, with studying, with work, family, me the same, and kind of getting to that point, Charlie, right, where we're in the point of the semester where all the tests seem to be coming at once, right?
Yes.
Like all the studies.
Yeah, it's kind of a bombardment of tests, if you will. It gets pretty hectic because keeping up with the dates alone is a task in its own self. It's just you have two tests one day, three tests another, two tests another day. You know, I had seven this week that passed between Monday and Thursday.
That's wild. And now we'll get into your background a little bit. And Charlie this is not his first go around in college. He holds a degree, and we'll get into that. But Charlie, tell us a little bit about, you know, growing up. I know we're from the same area. We're kind of the same age.
Yeah, we are.
Can anybody hear our accents? We're trying to pronounce our words and say
yeah,
things properly.
Yeah. We're trying not to make everything one syllable like we normally do. Growing up, just interested in always tinkering and taking things apart, putting it back together, but that's usually not true. I usually just left it in pieces somewhere. How it goes when you're a child, you're curious to the insides, and once you find them, you discard. Growing up, you know, on the poorer side of town, kind of just looking for any way to make money and whatnot. A lot of times friends would be like, hey, come help me work on this car or something like that, you know, hold some stuff for me, pass me wrenches, whatever the case may be. I'll give you 10 bucks. And for me, 10 bucks back in the day was, that's a gold mine, you know? Turn around, in school, doing well, decided to pursue certain endeavors that didn't exactly work out. Wanted to teach, found out I hated it. So I decided to move into a different avenue, and that avenue was the security department. I went in relatively young, And I worked my way up the ladder as much as I could. And that led me till about 2023, where I had to make a decision. And I gave my 2 weeks notice and I said, I'm going to become an aircraft maintenance engineer and turn my life around. Sitting at a desk was not bringing me any satisfaction and not bringing me any joy. And, you know, the significant other in my life, my mother, they could see that I was not happy with what was going on. And I needed to make a decision, and it wasn't an easy decision. And it was honestly terrifying. You're leaving a job that's paying you six figures to make zero for about a year and a half, to then, with the promise of, you know, moving on to aircraft maintenance and having that salary and being able to, you know, do the things that our A&P license lends to us. It's kind of like back in the day when they would sell you that pipe dream, like, oh, go to college, you'll make something of yourself. And now in this day, you go to college and you don't get shit out of it, honestly. Like it's one of those things where you have a degree and you're still there searching for jobs for a year, year and a half, you know? Kind of all seemed too good to be true at the time, but for what it's worth, it is working out. I have been enjoying myself. Vaughn, where you work and I attend, fantastic place to be. Great people, great professors. Not too many complaints about it. I can nitpick here and there, but you know, we can do that with anything.
I could have done the same. Now,
Yeah.
going to Charlie's work experience, you know, is interesting. When you say security, people may automatically, people listening or watching may automatically assume, you know, a typical security guard and just a typical place. But Charlie, actually, you had a very sort of high profile security job. Tell the listeners and viewers a little bit about that.
Right. So when I did start out, I was at Queen Center Mall working overnights, manning the loading bay and watching trucks just deliver things for all the stores. But over time and over networking, really, because half of it was how I did, half of it was who I knew, I managed to escalate myself in the company. And I went from just being a lowly security guard, I moved up to supervisory positions. Moved up to management positions and then eventually landed myself in the World Trade Center. And I had a huge team underneath me. On a daily basis, it was about 37 people on each shift underneath me. And then in total, there was about 145 people that worked there. And we did everything from patrol checks around the perimeter of the building. We would do fire safety because I am a registered fire safety director. We would do the fire safety extinguishers, sprinkler systems. We would do the access ports of the building, so main entrance, side entrance, loading docks, things like that. The garages was all us as well. It was kind of an all-encompassing job, and when I first took it, it was very daunting because I moved into that position. I jumped a few steps to get there as per a recommendation of someone higher. When I first got to the World Trade Center, I very well should not have been allowed in there. I didn't have the time in the company that I needed to qualify myself for that position because it's seen as one of the more illustrious positions, and it's a multi-million dollar contract for the company I worked for. As you can tell, the World Trade Center isn't just any random building. It's one of the biggest ones. So you get into a position like that, and it kind of changes your mindset a little bit. I went from being, honestly, at the time, a child, because let's be honest, I was 23 when it happened. You don't know the world at 23. You think you do, obviously. Every guy thinks he's the man at that age. But when I get into that position, I realize, man, I don't know a damn thing. And the way things are spinning around me, I have to mature myself very quickly and put myself in this mindset of it's not just me fending for myself anymore. I have people underneath me that need me. I have people at home that need me. And I have people that have issues that now they're looking to me to resolve. And Lord knows I had no idea what to do. There were so many times where I'm frantically dialing numbers like, hey, what's going on? Like I was thrown in the deep end and I kind of had to sink or swim. And I managed to swim for 7.5 years. I was at that place up until June of 2023. I was acting overnight director of security and fire safety for the World Trade Center.
And for people that are listening and watching, as a native New Yorker and being someone that's in their, 30s, being here for 9/11 and just the history behind that building, we hold those buildings very close to our heart. There's something special about them, and just seeing them rise up from nothing and to be the head of security at one of those World Trade Centers, that's a huge responsibility.
It is.
It's interesting, Charlie. What was kind of that nail in the coffin that actually made you say, you know what, this is probably not for me?
As much as, and I will admit, in the beginning, having people answer to you was kind of a power trip for someone as young as I was. It was like, wow, this, I've made it, getting paid a good amount of money. People are answering to me. I have a boss, but for the most part, I am the boss. Kind of gave me a false sense of security and ended up with me getting very complacent as well. Becoming complacent like that was one of those things that kind of led me to stay there for longer. But I kept realizing, and my lady and my mom would also attest to this as well. I would wake up and I would dread going to work. I disliked the thought of traveling to the city to go to my job. I disliked the thought of seeing those one or two people that irritated me, that it wasn't really anything to fret over, but I would let it get to me because I didn't realize at the time I was so irritated at the job and being a desk worker. I felt like I wasn't fulfilled. I felt like I could do more for myself. And it got to the point where the money I was making and the status I held within that community started getting diminished over time, and what was raising was my discomfort in the situation. And what happened was there was a small breaking point to where the company I was working for was kind of like, listen, they're thinking about changing some of the rules at the World Trade Center. And I was like, okay, what are the rules? They said, well, they're going to privatize with the NYPD. So in a couple of weeks, you might be all out of jobs. We don't know yet. And that's when it kind of clicked and realized the field I was in had zero job security because from one day to the next, you could be gone, And it happens to a lot of people. It happens to a lot of people that I know. Job security is a very, very sought after thing these days, and not a lot of places can offer it. And the security field was definitely one that did not offer it. And I knew right then and there. Further down the line, I realized my job was safe. They had a transitional period where they would have put me in and kept me as sort of a director's position. But I already knew history repeats itself. If this can happen once, it can happen again. And next time, there might not be a spot for me. I might be out on the street with bills. My mother, who's somewhat sick, and she's getting better now, but sick. My lady needs things done, and we have, a life that we're trying to live. And again, it happens to all of us. We cater our lives around the income that we have at the time. And if that income is to fail, the life around you can't just cost less, So had to take into consideration, like, listen, there's tides turning in this industry, and I don't think I want to ride that wave, and I need to jump ship. And my cousin, who graduated from Vaughn and is now working at Delta, was like, listen, man, you're good with your hands. Do the A&P program. He said, I know you'll pass. He said, if I pass it, you can pass it. He goes, you'll be doing something completely different, 180 your life, get more active, get out there, start doing something different. You did the desk job life. You don't like it. Try the tinkering life and see how it goes for you. So that's what I did.
And here you are. And first and foremost, it takes a big man to realize that, the six figures and all of that doesn't equate to happiness. And Charlie, luckily you were able to see that in that job and realize that you didn't want that future or didn't really have that future there. And a lot of people, as simply put as that is, a lot of people will stay in this vicious type of cycle for most of their life. It's interesting too that a lot of people listening and watching, there's so many people out there that have negative energy and negative attitudes, and a lot of it can be, attributed to maybe a job that people don't necessarily want to be in, and then it just makes them miserable, as you were kind of
Absolutely.
mentioning when you were going through that,
Absolutely.
and it affects every facet of your life, you
Yeah,
know.
it can get draining. You don't realize it. You think it's just, oh, everyday routine. I get up, shower, eat, get to work, do my 8 hours and get home. And you think, that's all there is to it. And you kind of get into this rhythm in life. And next thing you know, you're waking up and you feel more and more tired every day. And you're coming home, and the thought of leaving work is more exciting than anything you have planned over the weekend. You look forward to Friday so badly that on Wednesday you start getting excited about, oh, the weekend's coming up. I don't have to be at this place. Not you have plans with your significant other, not you're gonna go see your parents, you're gonna do something fun. It's just, I don't wanna be in this building anymore. And honestly, I'm under the mindset of if you're doing something you enjoy for work, it's never actually work, you know?
That's right.
And yeah, being in an office job, I got to that point where I was like, on Wednesday, I was like, 2 more days and I'm out of this place for 2 days and I can't wait. And it's like, what a poor existence. What a sad mindset. I would look in the mirror and I looked drained. I had huge bags under my eyes. I was always tired. No matter what I did, if I exercised, if I drank protein drinks, I tried every damn remedy under the sun that you can think of, and nothing helped. Nothing helped. I was drained on a spiritual level at that point, to where there was no recovering. There was no fix, no get better quick scheme. It was just my life force damn near was being just taken from me by this job that I didn't know I didn't want at the time. And then when I finally made that realization,
That's nuts. That's wild, right? Like it's like you don't even know that's happening while you're in it. You think it's like you're not working out enough, you're not eating well, but then people realize like, no, it's your job, man. Like it's the job.
It's environmental factors. People have been saying for a long time environmental factors make a situation worse, and I didn't put any stock into it at the time, but it's true, man. It's true. I was being as healthy as I could be. I even tried being unhealthy. I was eating all the sweets and garbage I could to see if maybe the sugary kind of switch in the brain would release some kind of chemical that would make me a little bit happier. And even then, it might have worked for maybe a day or two, but eventually I was like, I'm just getting fat and I'm still miserable. Like, what's going on, man? And it's crazy because once I quit, my girl said something to me, and she said something along the lines of, like, you look more excited now for Vaughn than you have had in the past like 5 years for anything else. And I'm like, damn, man, that hit me right here. That one hurt. And I was like, and I asked, I said, did you see how miserable I was? She goes, yeah, but it's up to you to make that decision at the end of the day. She said, I can tout and spew all the times that I want you to change your life, but it takes a commitment in order to kind of take that leap and make that step. And it's crazy how other people around you will see it, but no one wants to be that person to speak up. No one wants to be that person like, hey, you don't look okay. And as a male, and as someone who is a head of household for both my lady and my mother, you don't want to be told that you're unwell, because as men, you can attest to this, who grew up in New York, it was always about, we have to be the breadwinner, we have to be the trendsetter. And being told that you're not fulfilling that role is soul crushing. If someone is to tell any male that thinks that they're doing what they need to do for their family, hey, you don't look okay, is something wrong? They're gonna, nothing's wrong. What are you talking about? Get out of my face. They're gonna brush it off. But then that also plants a seed in your mind where maybe something's not okay. And now you start internalizing everything that's happening, and it starts to eat away at you, but you still feel like, well, I'm in the position where I have to provide. I have to have these bills paid. I have to put food on the table. And it's a very, very quick downward spiral to a point where now you've got the pressure of providing on you. You've got the pressure of maybe this isn't what I should be doing on you. And then underlying all of that is I still want to be cool, calm, and collected for my family and my loved ones. And it's gotten to a point where people won't actually tell you, how are you doing today? How's your mental health? And it's crazy because I've said that to some of my peers in school that look drained. I'm like, hey, how you doing today? You all right? And they're like, yeah, I'm cool. And you can tell they're not, but I'm not in a position where I should push on the subject. But I always like to ask just in case, maybe they just need someone to ask, or and maybe they'll open up about something, which some people have. There are some friends that I have made in school where they opened up about stuff and I gave them some advice from someone who's older. A lot of my peers in school are younger than me. And a lot of them were stressing about some of the stuff that they shouldn't be taking into account at this time of their life. And I'll give them a little insight, like, listen, I'm 32, I've been around the block a couple times, take it easy, And some of them it's helped, some of them kind of brushed it off and don't speak to me anymore, and that's cool, I give you the information, what you do with it is what you do with it. I can't force you to do anything, But it's made for some interesting interactions, being the person that I want to be, the person that gives them that option, like, hey, if you want to open up, I'm all ears. We may not know each other, but sometimes that's what you need. An outside perspective on your situation to be like, damn, the people around me aren't telling me anything. Maybe this person will tell me something,
It's very interesting, and we do live in an area. The tri-state area is a very, very competitive area. There's a certain
Yes.
unsaid standard that you need to meet as
Absolutely.
the head of a household, and
Absolutely.
the, as a man in this area, you have to
Yeah.
keep this certain mentality and this attitude,
Right.
right?
I've been taught since 10, 12 years old, like, listen, your job is to work, it's to provide, it's to be that soldier in the army, to be that guy that everyone can look up to, like, hey, this guy's doing his job. But no one actually tells you what that job is supposed to be. They just say provide for your family and protect them.
Yeah,
But what
so
does that
true.
encompass?
That
It's very vague.
it really is. And coming from some of the poorer areas in in Brooklyn, Queens, me
Yes.
not growing up in the most extravagant area in Queens, coming from Middle Village, it's very expensive where we live.
Yes. Yes.
And coming from kids fixing each other, because Charlie said that he used to fix cars. I used to fix the Civics with my
Yeah.
buddies around the park. And, going from that to getting a job, a security job that's making 90, 100, 150, 180,000, like initially that may seem like success coming from where we come from, just because of the money that you're seeing coming in. And in reality, it was quite the contrary. It was just bringing you down that every
Yeah.
that everyday job.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about this. Now, you were also a teacher, right?
Yes, for a short while,
How did
yes.
that come about?
Well,
And I see you in class, and Charlie is very good at explaining things to his fellow classmates. He's very good at interpreting things and understanding them and then applying it. So you could kind of see that teacher in him. But what got you there to teaching?
so at a very young point in my life, it was a situation where, growing up back in the day, school wasn't what it was now. To be fair, none of the teachers really cared like that. You had some who were very good teachers, and it does show itself to this day as well, but there were some who were there for the paycheck and whatnot. And back in the day, being a teacher, when I was growing up in the 90s, paid well for the demographic and the situation that we were tied to, being in Brooklyn, going to school in Bushwick and in Ridgewood. Being a teacher there paid well in comparison to the cost of living in the area. So a lot of the people ended up teaching, and I was always under the impression that no one gave me the time of day I needed to learn the way I wanted to learn. And when I was very young, grades like 1 through 5, 6, I was a straight A student, scholar. I passed all the citywide tests, and I got into one of the schools that you had to take a test to get into, and only 4 people from my entire district got into that school. My family was very proud, and then very quickly, both me and my mother at the time realized these people didn't give a shit. You know, they would load me up with work, and I was sitting here. I was maybe 12, 13 years old. I was getting back problems from carrying around textbooks, and I was getting headaches and migraines from the amount of studying I had to do to keep up with the curriculum. And when you would ask a teacher a question, they'd be like, "It's in the book." No time of day for the students. And it was, the school was a very small setting school. It was in Brooklyn, right off of Knickerbocker Avenue in Bushwick. The class sizes were about 15 students. And, you know, with a class size that small in comparison to 40 students, like most other classes had at that time, there's time for individual attention to each of these students, but the teachers were sitting behind a desk doing nothing. And in my head, I wanted to be the person that no matter what avenue of teaching I wanted to go into, I wanted to be the person that would give the attention. And I wanted to be the person that would give the quality to someone that they needed to succeed that I didn't get as a child, you know? Come to find out that maybe I waited too long, the times changed, whatever, but the people I was teaching were, I don't want to badmouth anyone, but lackluster to say the least. You know, there
The
was no,
students.
the students, yeah, the students. It was one of those things where no one cared anymore. There was no, almost no integrity in it. Like, no one wanted to be a student, you know? And I was teaching older people at the time on subjects not exactly particular to school, like core curriculum stuff. So it was one of those things where I had some people in my class that were older than me. And it was one of the things where I'm not letting a child teach me. I refuse to do this work kind of thing. And it's like, well, you're paying for this. And like, why? Like, just like, it's out of pocket. The course was like $750 out of pocket. And there was no financial aid or anything for that course. It was just, you take the course, you pay the 750, you get certified, whatever the case may be. And these people who are older than me, even though I have the certification to teach the course, they don't want to take my instruction because I'm younger than them.
Because
It
you're
was
younger.
almost like a machismo thing, like almost like a, like, I don't want to be taught by someone I deem inferior to me. And it's like, well, it's not anything about superiority or inferiority. It's, you got to get the shit done. Like, you know, you paid for the course. And I very quickly found out that my New York and my Brooklyn and Queens didn't really mesh with the patience needed for teaching. It was one of those things where I was seeing myself get ticked off at like the smallest thing. And what really led me over the edge was I was bringing it home. And I hate when I bring it home and tensions rise. In my own walls, in my own domain, tensions rise because of something that happens 15 miles away that has nothing to do with, you know, my mom, my lady, family members, whatever the case may be. I'm like, I'm bringing this stuff home and I'm making people around me miserable because I'm miserable. So I was like, it's time to jump ship. We can't do this anymore. Yeah. So I went back to the security stuff. And that's when I started rising up the company a little more and whatnot. What helped me rise up the company was the fact that I had a management and a teaching position. They said, "Okay, you know your stuff. You had people underneath you. You're used to that. Instead of us putting you down as a regular guard, we'll put you as a supervisor and see what happens." Just so happens, my third day on the job, I was actually supervising at the homeless shelters in New York City. And my third day on the job, someone overdosed and died on heroin in the shelter. And it's a very nerve-wracking experience. I was trembling from head to toe. The adrenaline was rushing, but I handled it professionally, and my company enjoyed that. So within 2 years of that, they had moved me onto corporate buildings and whatnot because they figured he can handle stress. And these corporate buildings are the stressors of New York for the most part in the security field. You've got not only your people working for you, but now the entire building, all its residents as well, whether it be upper management, the regular Joe Schmoes that work there at a desk job, they come to you for the issues. So it isn't just limited to the scope of your job and your people that you work with under the same employment, but it's everyone in the vicinity. And, you know, they in the company that I worked for, they told tiers by the color of shirt you wore. So we had shirts emblazoned with our crest and whatnot. And when you wore a white shirt, you were seen as the official. You were seen as the person to go to get things done. I wore the white shirt. 90% of my job was sitting at a desk taking phone requests for something going wrong somewhere, sending people this way, sending people that way. I had gotten to a point where I wasn't actually doing any of the securing. I was kind of micromanaging everyone else doing the securing. And I think that's when it kind of started that I started hating my job. And it from that point to when I
Let me.
quit was 5 years.
5 years. Let me ask you this, Charlie. You know, you not only with teaching, not only with security, with your family, you are always that person that's dealing with these different types of stresses, and people look to you when these types of things are happening. You know, going into your mother and your mother not feeling well and being sick, and you taking care of your mother and having to support her and being there for her. What do you think has groomed you and gotten you to be this person where you can handle all these different types of stresses and different things being thrown at you?
Good question. So I would say my mother's been sick for a very long time, and not sick in the sense of an ailment per se, but she got into an accident very early on that led to a lot of surgeries for different places in her body. She's had two surgeries on her feet, two on her knee, six on her back, two on her neck, as well as kidney and ovarian cancer. So it's been a long journey. And honestly, it's been going on so long, I can't even really tell you where it started. But back in the day, my mom was working at the post office right there in Morgan, 33 and 10th in the city. And she was well known, she was well respected, she did her job well. And then from one day to the next, she's home and she's not really earning. And the struggle in the beginning was not really the ailments and the sickness and whatnot. It was finding a way to get a New York woman that's been working since she was 18 years old to calm the hell down. Let's be real. It's they're always fired up. They want to go, 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 just like the rest of New York. And like, she was hurt. She needed to recover. And it was one of those things where you need to mellow out. Kind of have to like ride the wave as it's going. And right now her wave was on a downturn, and she needed to kind of, for lack of better words, get with the times for the most part. So that was the first thing. Insurance covered stuff, and you know, we had money. We would pay whatever we need to pay. But then things started, you know, adding up. She got mellowed out, but now she needed more and more surgeries. More things were going wrong, and then the cancer happened. And you know, there was a point where she came into my room crying and said that she had cancer. And it was like, what the hell do I do now? You know, so I took her hand, I prayed, and I said, we're gonna get through this, no matter what. We're gonna get through this, you know. And it was at that point where I knew, man, like things can change so quickly from one second to the next. Before, when they gave her the test, it was kind of like, ah, it's a formality. Next thing you know, it's full-blown cancer, and we're scheduling a surgery for removal of a part of the body. You know, it's kind of insane. And you have to sit there and kind of process things at such an alarming rate. And you'd like to think, okay, I have a situation I have to deal. I'm just going to focus this, but the world doesn't pause for you. I still had to work. We still had family that needed things. I still had my lady that needed things. There was issues going on in my own personal life that didn't involve my mother that still needed tending to. Juggling all those things became my full-time job more than actually working my profession was at the time. You know, micromanaging my own life became my 24/7, my 365. And I gotta give it up to my lady. She's been so helpful and like a rock in these hard times. She's been a huge support. Nothing but love and support from her. And I honestly couldn't have made it without her. And you know, my mom being who she is and the strength she has, and you know, she's a 5'2" Spanish woman. You know, they're feisty. So yeah, she didn't stop fighting for a single second. Even when all the chips were stacked against her, she never stopped fighting. I never stopped fighting. And, you know, we're in a better place now. You know, things are stable. She still has aches and pains from all the surgeries. You know, if you go through 14 surgeries, it's going to leave after effects. But she's cancer free, thankfully. That is the main thing we wanted. She's cancer free. She's doing better. She's going out. She's hanging out with family. You know,
Thank God.
she's seeing her sisters again. She's seeing her brothers. They come over with the new babies in the family and whatnot. She gets to take care of them, see them, and she's enjoying life now. And she's a lot better. So things have mellowed out slightly. And to be honest, a lot of what led me into the A&P program was that things were kind of mellowing out a little bit, you know? Things were kind of tapering off, and it was at a point where I was like, okay, I'm safe to take on an endeavor that I want to pursue. But before that, it wasn't even possible, man. Like, it was one of those things where life was so hectic and the whirlwind of calamities going on around me, I couldn't possibly even fathom leaving my job to pursue something. You know, too many people relied on me. But it builds a sort of a core strength to go through something like that. Not that I wish that on anyone. I wish everyone health and safety and prosperity. But when you get that core, you get that strength in you. Afterwards, you feel untouchable for a little while, you know? And I'll be honest, I needed to be humbled. I really did, because I felt I was on top of the world when things started tapering off and she was doing better and the stuff in the personal life got better. I was like, man, I'm that guy. I'm untouchable. And then school knocked me down a notch, as it should. So, you know.
It's pretty wild, right? The way things happen for a reason. In hindsight, everything happens perfectly, but while you're going through it, it doesn't really make sense. You don't even see yourself getting out of it sometimes.
There was no light at the end of the tunnel during all of that. I'll tell you that. You know, when someone says have hope, have faith, things like that, I couldn't. I couldn't. There was no switch in me that was like, there's something there at the end
Can't
that I can
see
look
it.
forward to. Yeah, everything was just blocked by the negativity, but you have to persevere.
You know, speaking about you being the rock and the core in so many people's lives, there's a rock and a core of your life, and your wife, the love of your life, somebody that has supported you, somebody you always speak about her. She sounds like just a wonderful person. Tell us about the person that supports you. How do you guys meet? How does she feel about, being with a future A&P aviation guide? But
Look,
tell us how you guys met.
it's been a long time. We've been together 9 years, known each other longer. Yeah, man, it was just one of those kind of twists of fate that we landed in each other's laps. You know, when we think back to the situations we were in at the time, there was no rhyme or reason why we should have met and clicked the way we did, but we did. And it was absolute insanity. And from day one, she's just been such a powerful force in my life to where I couldn't imagine going through any of this without her, you know? Because even if it's just at the end of the day, I need someone to tell me, you did good today. It's going to be okay. I love you. Whatever the case may be. Just that little spark, that little glimmer in the night sky that seems so dark throughout the day, keeps you pushing, man. And she has her own issues, and I help her with her issues. She helps me with mine. But at the end of the day, I take comfort in knowing the fact that this woman is, she's here for me. And she does, even when things in her life are going crazy, she always takes the time for me. And she always takes a moment to just, even if we're so busy that day we can't see each other, she'll text me, hey, I love you, keep going, kind of thing, you know? And I do the same for her. And, you know, we always make time for each other, but there's been times where, you know, a day or two in a row, we're so busy, we just see each other fleeting and passing via text message and whatnot. You know, the schedule differences, you know, things like that, and time differences and whatnot. Sometimes you don't get that quality time with your significant other. And for a lot of people, that takes a strain on a relationship. You know, people want togetherness, people want their time with each other. And with her, I don't have to worry about just any kind of like nagging or any kind of negativity. She knows when we get together, it's all laughs, it's all good times. The times we're apart, she trusts me to handle what I need to do. I trust her to handle what she needs to do. And we meet in the middle and we share stories. You know, if I didn't see her for a day or two, hey, you know what happened? This shit is crazy, you know? Or we're in school, I'm in school now. I'll text her like, hey, I got 100 on that test. And she's like, congratulations, you know? Or I text her, hey, I boxed that one. She's like, you'll get them next time, you know? Whatever the case it is, it's always positivity between us, and it's always a bright spot in my day when I get to see her and speak with her. Even if it's just for a couple minutes, it's one of those things where it's like someone cares about me, and someone cares about me enough to take time out of their day to check on me. It's the greatest feeling in the world, honestly.
You
It
guys have
really is.
you and you know what? That's what makes a perfect, a great relationship to a partnership where you guys are both bringing each other up and helping each other every single day, you know, being there for each other and making each other better.
It's been a lot of growing over the 9 years, I'll say that. When we started, we were both vastly different people. I was very much a lot more Brooklyn, Queens, New York than I am now. I had no filter, I had no switch. I
We're
was
rough on the we're rough on the run the show.
for sure. And she kind of smoothed me out a little bit, took some of the rough edges, smoothed me out, kind of helped me form who I wanted to be, who I thought I wanted to be, wasn't who I actually wanted to be. And the perception I had of myself and New York and being a man and what I thought was needed of me, she kind of like flipped that on its head a little bit. And I was like, oh shit, there's a different side of this, you know? A big part of it was I'm an only child. So I don't have the perspective of siblings and how that changes your perspective, and she does. And just from that kind of comparison between life alone, how we would see a situation, how I would approach it, my view on it, how she would approach it, her view on it, two vastly different worlds. And it's like this is the same situation, but it can be handled in so many different ways. So now when I see a situation in front of me, I think of it from a couple different ways. I think of it from my own vision. I try to think of it from her vision, and a lot of the times I run stuff by her all the time, like, hey, this is what's happening. I need some input. And she'll give me some input, and I'll kind of formulate a decision. And also a spiritual level, you know, I want to do right by the people around me, my religion, things like that. So I kind of try to take a bird's eye view of every situation and kind of weigh my options in which way I can approach a situation. Sometimes you have to make snap decisions, and I get that. And I've made terrible snap decisions in my lifetime, both during school, in the past.
Who
It's
doesn't?
just, it's normal, right? It's the, we're human, we all make mistakes. But when I have the time to, I usually try to look at it myself, and I try to have her look at it as well, because her insight and her input to me is gold. It's diamonds. It's above whatever the most precious thing you can think of. That's what her word is to me. You know, she's very smart. She was when we met, she was wise beyond her years, and she had so much love and attention she could give me. And for the longest time, I felt like I couldn't reciprocate that because I felt like I didn't offer anything on the table. But then later on in the years, she told me like, no, like I learned so much from you in so many different avenues that I wouldn't have known. She said, because she's a female and because she has siblings versus a male who's single and is kind of just doing his own thing in the world, you know? So I used to think I didn't bring a lot to the relationship, but she over time had to reassure me that no, we were trading equal tit for tat the entire time. And that made me feel better about it because in the beginning, it was another one of those things where I feel like I wasn't being the man that I could be. I wasn't bringing anything to the table. I felt like I was constantly absorbing information, but I wasn't putting anything out there. And come to find out, I guess I was doing a good job without even knowing. So I guess that's kudos to me or something.
And that's a great point that Charlie brings up, because that can not only be applied to relationships, but to work and just about everything else. You know, you could be making a difference in someone's life by just something so simplistic, and you'll never have any idea that you did something or you were doing something positive. You know, and Charlie, you were definitely the man that was made for your wife, and you guys seem to just bring each other up. You guys
I believe so,
have had some pretty interesting experiences and some nice travels. And that was another thing that really caught my attention when Charlie and I were talking about this. You guys have lived not only in the United States. Where else have you lived, Charlie?
Well, she's originally from Australia, and the intention is to go back there, right? But now I wanted to touch on this as well. In the security field, mind you, I tell this to a lot of people now as well. This is the one thing I'll open up about. Obviously, with Australia, you have to apply for a visa to move if you're not a citizen, obviously. She obviously has citizenship. She was born and raised there. I only have American citizenship, so, and they like Americans there, so they let you in pretty easily. But it was a shock when I put in my first visa application. I put in for what's called a working holiday visa, which is a 1 year visa. You go there, you work in a field, and then once you get your 1 year in, you renew into a permanent residence visa that allows you to live there. You do 3 more years under that. And then you get your citizenship. That was the road I wanted to take. That was kind of the easiest course for me to get into the country legitimately. And obviously, I don't want to do things illegitimately. That just leads to problems down the road. When I put in my visa, they said it's usually about a 3 to 4 week turnaround to get a reply. Within 4 days, I was denied. And when I call in, I'm like, why was I denied? And what they told me was, your profession is not something we need here.
Oh,
And
security.
security, yeah. So to me, I'm like, I'm making the money. I'm doing what I have to do in New York. I'm providing, I'm being there for people. And Australia's like, for lack of better words, you ain't shit, you know? And
Do they not make that much over there, security professionals?
not only do they not make that much, but a lot of the times over there, it's police force that's employed to. Their crime rates are so low that cops don't have a lot to do. So a lot of the times, if they need something secured, a cop is racking up some overtime to do that security, or they'll hire a contract from, Australian police force to man that post, essentially. So when they told me, listen, we're not letting you in off the strength of your job. There's other ways you can get in, but your profession is not one of them. It was startling. It was one of those things where I'm like, wow, I worked my ass off to get to where I am, and I struggle every day. And outside of my little bubble that I live in New York, I don't mean a damn thing. And it took a little bit of research to figure out why. But I also did a little bit of research and realized, man, security in other countries isn't anything. It's low tier, like unprofessional work. People damn near look down on it. And it's like, I've made a career out of this path, and I've put time and effort and money and hours into getting certifications to the point where I was CPR certified, defibrillator certified, first aid. I could teach all those courses.
You got
Fire
the
safety
fire,
director.
yeah.
Yep. I made it to a high rung on the ladder in my company. People respected me. People knew my name in the company. If you mentioned Charlie, they knew exactly who you were talking about. To be told by the place I actually want to be versus New York that doesn't matter. You're not anyone to us. It hurts. It's heartbreaking, you
I was gonna
know?
ask how that felt, but yeah.
It was one of those things where you just feel defeated and deflated, if you will. I sat there and I was talking to my lady, and I'm like, I feel like my hopes and dreams are crushed. We had this dream for so long of Australia and living and being over there, kids over there, the whole nine, my citizenship, everything. And in one fell swoop, in a matter of 3 or 4 days, they were like, sorry, no. And it's like, well, what the hell? What now? You know? That was the biggest deciding factor in joining Vaughn College. Because this is kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but my vision for the future, Australia doesn't actually teach the AMP program. They don't teach the EASA license.
Okay.
They outsourced that to South Africa and the United Kingdom.
Interesting. Okay.
I want to obtain my license and use my previous time as an instructor, as well as in the security field, as well as my A&P license to start the first school in Australia. I want to be the one to kind of open up that door for other people in Australia. I want to start the A&P program in Australia. Mind you, it's a large goal, very,
Keep my number.
yeah,
Yeah.
for sure, for sure, absolutely. It's a very big dream, and it's only something that came to me somewhat recently through talks with, my mother and other people from school, my lady, all these things. But it seems something that I would be proud to do, and it's not something that I deem as work. It's something that I deem as somewhat of a legacy, if you will. I'm not saying I want my name in the history books. I don't care about stuff like that. But if I'm the name that's associated with starting the program and it opens the doors for other kids, 18, 19, that don't really have a direction, but they see this and say, hey, let me try it on, they end up loving it. People who are sick of their desk jobs like I was and want to pursue a new avenue.
Yeah.
If I can open that door to people, I can leave this place and know that I did something worth my time. I can be happy to tell my kids what I did. My lady can be happy and proud to call me her husband. I want to be successful, but not successful with money and with status. I don't care about those things. Those things mean nothing to me. I want to be a name that's recognized for helping people, opening paths, and hopefully one day, maybe my children can pursue the career as well. I like to think I have a broad spectrum of careers that I've been through. Maybe one of them will follow in some of my footsteps. Maybe one of them will enjoy the teaching. Maybe one of them will be an A&P mechanic. You never know, I like to keep the doors open for any possibility.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate goal right now. Is it achievable? I don't know yet. Baby steps. Got to get through Vaughn College first and make the move first. So those are the two priorities at the moment. But I have a road that I'd like to follow.
Yeah. And you know what? So in where do you see yourself in 5 years? Do you see yourself maybe staying here? Do you see yourself completing the program here and then shipping out back to
Okay,
Australia?
so that's actually a great question. Right now, my timeline is on a 3-year interval. So the way it works is a registered A&P holder in the United States, if you do 2 years in the industry, you can transfer your A&P license to a temporary EASA license in Australia slash England. And you'd have to go through a little bit of schooling, about 6 months to a year, to get certifications on very certain things. Basically, you know how if you transfer college, they'll honor some of your credits?
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing. If you're acting A&P for 2+ years, they'll transfer some of your knowledge, and about 75% of the EASA license will be done. I just have to kind of icing on the cake, go through the little bit of schooling. They usually take 4 years in England. I'd have to do about a half a year to a year, and then I'd be a full Type 66 EASA holder. I'd be able to work on all the European planes, all the Australian planes, South African planes, a lot of the stuff in the Middle East. It opens up a lot of doors like that. And also being a dual holder of an A&P, because it doesn't invalidate your A&P license, you still have that for life as well. Being a dual holder puts me in a unique position where I can maintain US employment through my A&P license and be a provisional mechanic on the other side. So, like, let's say a flight goes to Australia and it breaks down, there's an American A&P holder there. We can put him on the job, send less people over, we'll pay him some money, get the job done, and then I go back to working on my Australian planes.
Any aircraft going in there with that N number is fair
Yeah,
game with your
fair
A&P.
game. Yep. I asked quite a few people already, and some of them checked for me, and they said, yeah. Anything that starts with an N serial number, you're good to go anywhere in the world. And it's a good feeling knowing that I could kind of be the guy to be relied on at that point, like I can work on anything. And it's like it's kind of it's a little ego hit, but Yeah, I wanna do it, and that's the course at the moment. That's where I'm headed for now. I've been in talks with a couple people at the school, a couple people outside the school, a couple people on the Australian side to kind of make sure I'm steering myself in the right path. And yeah, so far so good. It's gonna run me a little bit more money. The entire course on the Australian side, when I have to take the course for the EASA license, is about 13,000 Australian that I would have to shell out, which is about 10,000 here.
I was gonna ask. Yeah, that rate
Yeah,
is okay.
it's
It
about
was much
10,000.
different
Yeah.
at another point, right, Charlie? Wasn't it a bigger difference? We were getting a lot more Australian dollars. Was it
Yes. Yeah.
the
During Trump's
last
time,
presidency? It was the last
the
presidency.
last presidency. Yeah, the Australian dollar kind of tanked at the time, so it was it's funny because the second he left, went back to normal. It was fine. Literally within days, you can see the chart just start going up, and it's like, well, okay. I mean, we knew what that was about. Yeah, it's pretty stable now, though. It's pretty stable, which is fine because obviously, as AMP mechanics, we're allowed to do a lot of overtime and stuff. So saving money and sending it that way, the way it's working now, obviously, everyone taxes the hell out of you when you send money anywhere. The conversion rate kind of covers that tax in a sense, and a little bit more. So if I send 20 bucks, the conversion rate will make it like 26, and then they tax me $5. So I end up with 21, you know? So it's technically a net positive if you think of it that way. But yeah, there's a lot of places where you send money, like if you're sending to England, their dollar is stronger than ours. So for one of our dollars, you get 70 cents over there. That's rough. So as long as it stays above a 1-to-1 ratio, I'm pretty comfortable with it, you know? But yeah, things do cost less over there. I will say that. The cost of living, definitely cheaper. Cooking at home is definitely cheaper. The biggest culture shock I think that I
Yeah,
found
what
out
is
was
the biggest
that
culture shock?
eating out over there is a luxury. I'm talking like McDonald's is damn expensive. Like, you know,
Really?
you're feeding a family of three, that thing's like 60, 70 bucks. Like, it's eating out is a luxury over there. It's not something you just do on a whim. Like us, we're at the AMP program. I'm at school. I could take a run to Chipotle, 15 bucks, and
Right.
I've got a meal for the day. That doesn't happen in Australia. You're bringing food from home if you want to have any kind of savings in the bank, you know? That was one of the biggest ones for me, you know? And it's kind of crazy how different that is and how much healthier they are. Another thing I've realized is the amount of just sugar in things over there is so much less than over here. And their obesity rate is so much less than ours. And their health factor is higher. They have less crime. And also coming from my wife's background, she's not pure Australian. Her family is of a Middle Eastern descent. So their beliefs and whatnot was kind of also a culture shock to me because it was kind of Middle Eastern mixed with Australian, and I was foreign to both of those. So when they started telling me about these things, I'm like, there's no way that's possible because I'm from New York. I'm like, ain't no way in hell we doing some of that stuff. And it's like, yeah, it's normal over here. Everyone does it. And I'm like, holy. I'm like, this is crazy. And it's like, it opens your eyes, like, man, I've been living in this bubble in New York for so long.
Yeah.
The outside world is like, it's out there. It's out there.
This is how far inside the New York bubble I am. So when you watch, this is the question I have to ask, of course.
Okay.
When you watch all the things, the YouTube videos and all that stuff about the ginormous insects that exist in
I knew
Australia,
this was coming.
is that a truth, or is that actually,
So,
is that everywhere? Like those big
no.
giant spiders and the
No,
freaking.
it's not everywhere. Sometimes they wander into places that they shouldn't be. But for the most part, if you're living on the coasts of Australia, East Coast, West Coast, you're usually fine. You'll see one of those big things like once or twice a year maximum. If you're living in the dense bush in the middle, what they call the outback, yeah, everything out there wants to kill you. Everything's trying to eat, you know? But if you've got some sort of civilization, then yeah, you're usually fine for the most part, you know?
I didn't realize it, Charlie, until you and I were speaking about it, but I didn't realize that that middle is not really populated. When you look at Australia, it's huge,
It's
and the
huge,
middle is
and
not like
not only is
everyone's
it
on the outside.
huge, but the amount of people there is not that much. I'm pretty sure New York has more people than all of Australia. We can
That's wild,
fact check
man.
this, but I'm pretty sure Australia is very, very like scarce in its population, and I'm pretty sure it's mostly stuck to the coasts, where my lady is from is the Gold Coast, which is the east coast of Australia, and the house is by like where they lived was by like the biggest surfing spot on the Gold Coast, you know? So a lot of the stuff over there was kind of touristy, focused around surfing, and you see crazy stuff that I've never even thought of, like vending machines with like flip-flops to go onto the beach with in case you don't have a pair. Like just wild stuff you could never even imagine in New York. And so over there they have a lot of efforts for like cleanup and pest control and things like that. So she didn't deal with a lot of that growing up. Yeah, once in a while you'll see a spider that's the size of a dinner plate, but now you get it out and you're good, you know? It's one of those things. What you got to understand though is all those insects over there, they're more scared of you than they are of them. But the
Okay.
main thing is it's so hot over there. They want to be in the shadows to cool off. And sometimes it may seem like they're chasing you. They just want to be in your shadow. They just want to cool off a little bit. A lot of times you don't bother them, they won't bother you, and they'll leave your premises eventually. You know, obviously relocating them is kind of a danger sometimes because they can kill you. Let's be real here. It's
Yes, a lot of things can kill you there.
they can kill you. So relocating them is sometimes a hassle, but a lot of people do relocate them from what I understand. They'll like put a little Tupperware over it and then
Seen
pop a
that.
plate and pop it outside and whatnot. And I guess that's the safest option if you want to kill it. I am a New Yorker. By all means, smash that thing to pieces. You know,
Kill
that's
it,
the way I see it.
or it becomes a guest in your house
And
temporarily.
we don't have room for that many legs, man, in my household. At least that's not gonna happen. I'm under the understanding you kill it, you spray it with something, let it die, sweep it up, whatever the case may be. Some people are more like, oh my God, don't hurt it, this and that. It's not doing anything wrong. And I'm like, the first thing it did was trespass. You know, that's the way I see it as a New Yorker. So I don't know. It's up to interpretation. But with me, I will be putting, for lack of better words, foot and ass. They will be gone on my watch.
And I just had to check it. And Charlie was basically spot on with that population. The Australian population in 2023 was 26, about 26.7 million, 26,699. All of New York State, this is just New York State,
Right.
is 19.6 million, about there. So
Yeah.
it just in our state alone, you've almost matched all of Australia's
Australia. Yeah.
population.
It's crazy. It's crazy. You know, and I you tell my wife's family about like the traffic here and the ones that haven't been here. You tell them about the traffic here and subway population and just how many people there are, and they kind of can't fathom it. You know? And I'm like, yeah, sometimes you're walking through the city and you can't see the sidewalk because it's just a sea of heads. It's just people, you
Yeah.
know? And don't get me started when they open those damn those street fairs in the city, like by 42nd
Oh,
Street and
man.
whatnot. Or they you know what's a big one for them? They see the New Year's Eve ball drop and they're like, ah, there's so many people there. And I'm like, that's just a Thursday, you know, like
Yeah,
it's just
for
a,
real.
that's normal for us, you know? That's the D train in Brooklyn by 8th Avenue on a daily basis at like
For real.
4 p.m. And it's like that's their culture shock. It's just how many damn people there are here in such a small place.
How
But I
was it,
will say,
Charlie?
go ahead,
Oh
yeah.
no, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say New York has a very unique thing of it's kind of like a melting pot. All the cultures and all the religious faiths and everything is just mixed into one pot. And no one sees anyone as superior or inferior. We're all just New Yorkers.
Yeah.
We're all just here doing our thing, you know? No one bothers
Yeah.
anyone. Hey, how you doing? Keep it moving, you know? Over there, it's a lot more sectionalized. You'll have like a place like a Chinatown, or you'll have like a Middle Eastern area, or an Asian area, or like a South African
And those
area,
groups
where
stay in those
and they
areas.
kind of stay in those areas, and the shops will be in those areas. They're open to everyone. They're not going to discriminate, but they stick together because like-minded individuals work well together. So you have the people like let's say there's a Middle Eastern area, the Middle Eastern shops where you can buy the specialty foods and all the spices that you need for that kind of cuisine, all in that little area. And then you go there and you get to, have good relation and good conversations with these people, and you get to know them and whatnot. And you can travel to other areas and do that with everyone, because for the most part, Australia is pretty kind from what I gather. I don't have too much experience, obviously, but like from the people that I know that have lived there full time their whole life, like my lady, her family, whatever the case may be, they don't really have the issue of like a lot of rudeness and, things like street fights and stuff like that. Obviously, the cases happen here and there, but nothing like New York, And the funniest thing is, in New York, you see a street fight, you're like, eh, another Thursday, like
It's
it's just
wild.
whatever. Yeah.
You'd be driving over the G, just driving over the GW, and somebody's hanging out the roof on the sunroof. And I was like,
Yeah.
oh, all right, well,
Nah.
like you just is, you become immune to this
Yeah, man.
zoo that we live in. It's funny, but it's like, but then you see, Charlie sees the other side of it, meeting his wife, living out in Australia, and you're like, wow, New York City's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And the funniest thing is, you come back with stories from New York and no one believes you. And it's like,
No,
listen, this stuff is normal
it's
everyday activities to us. And they're
it's
like, that can't happen. I've been told multiple times, that's impossible. And I'm like, there's video. You want to see it? It's like one of those things. It's crazy. And how you asked me about the spiders and stuff like that. Everyone not from America asked me about the rats in New York. So we have our own thing that they ask about as well.
What is
It's
your
always,
wait? So what do you tell them about the rats? I want
oh,
to
they're
know.
there. Master Splinter's definitely with the Ninja Turtles in them
Give us
streets,
a size. Give us a size.
Oh,
Do
biggest
you
one
tell
I've
them?
seen? Ooh, I tell them about this, but
Yeah.
biggest one I've seen was like a
Kitten
small dog.
size.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's yeah, I've seen one of the things carry away a whole slice of pizza, man. That stuff is
Bro,
real.
for
It's
real.
yeah, it's
Yeah.
bad. It gets
It...
bad.
All
Gets
right,
bad.
so looking, we're looking towards the end.
Sir.
Charlie, you're in AMP. You've been doing absolutely phenomenal, and you're going to be getting towards the end here. You're kind of like midway through it.
Right,
Where do you,
second
how do you
semester.
see, I guess one of the last questions we'll look at is aviation maintenance, and how do you feel about aviation maintenance now that you're really learning about the systems? Do you think that it's easier than what you thought it would be? I know your cousin said that it was fairly simple program, but do you see it as easy as he had mentioned? And where do you see aviation maintenance in the future? You're aware of the shortage and everything, and you're coming
Right.
in and filling that gap. Whether or not you're staying here or over there, you're still going to be using that A&P
Right.
somewhere. So where, I guess two-parter to that. How's the school going, and where do you see aviation maintenance going?
How school's going? Look, one of our first interactions, GE10, basic AC/DC electricity. Our second meeting, I came up to you and I was like, I don't know a damn thing that's going on. Is there some kind of tutoring or something? And you were like, give it a couple weeks, trust me, it'll be fine. And lo and behold, I got an A in your class, and I don't think I dropped below a 97 on any of your tests and whatnot, and it just clicked. And I was always under the impression that math is my worst subject, But turn around, it's not that math is my worst subject, is that my math teachers were abysmal, and the way you laid things out made it very interesting, and I enjoyed finding out how to do these equations. And another good thing about you, and why you're one of my favorite professors, I can say that openly, and I tell everyone that, is because you take the time and you'll come over to the students and you'll explain something, and you won't lose your temper, and you don't scream and shout at people, and it's not just slides on the board. You're there, you're writing, you're teaching us, you're there hands-on. I've seen you use tools in the hangar, things like that. So, and not everyone does it. You know, not everyone does it. There are some professors who are very clearly there for the paycheck. And I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus. I'm not going to,
Yeah.
you know,
Everyone
name any
knows who they
names.
are without the names, you know?
And anyone who sees this is that there's going to be a couple that pop into the mind. And you're right. I will say that now, you're right. But there are a handful of you guys that actually take your profession seriously and teach what needs to be taught. And I think in terms of the schooling, we need more of that. As much as people like to take the easy A from someone, and as much as people are telling us, listen, what you're learning here is mostly general aviation and not line maintenance for a commercial, it's really by the book when you get out there. This is still stuff you should have the knowledge of. And getting through class with a prepware test, that's not teaching you anything, you know? Memorizing an answer is not going to help you when you're in the field, like, hey, we're doing weight and balance stuff today. I don't know that. Let me read the book. And the book tells you to do the math, and you never did the math in class. And it's like, well, now what the hell do I do? Now you're sitting there in the freezing cold, might be raining, might be snowing. You're on your cell phone, shivering half to death, trying to figure out an equation. And it's like, well, you know, I mean, you might be in a hangar if you're lucky, but let's be real. Most of us coming out of this program are going to get it in kind of the crappy jobs. Yeah. Which we all expect. Aviation maintenance in the future. I will say, I hope the shortage continues until I am hired. I will say that because I
Yes,
want the
good
job.
answer.
I
Great
want the
answer.
job. But I do hope that the shortage gets answered in the long run. But also, I hope that places like Vaughan can nurture more students into proper A&P so some of these tragedies we learn about in school don't happen. You know, there's a lot of history of maybe not negligence, but I guess maybe complacency in the workplace where people overlook things that shouldn't be overlooked, something small that can lead to a catastrophe, you know? I take pride in my work. I always have, I always will. So when I go out there, I know I'm gonna ruffle some feathers with how precise and attention to detail that I'll play because some people, ah, hurry it up, hurry it up. And it's like, no, my name doesn't go on this form until I know things are the way they should be. By the book, you know? And I think nurturing that mentality for the students going into it is something that the school needs to focus on more. And there's some great professors, don't get me wrong. There's some people there who teach and they are fantastic at their job. You learn the stuff, you know? Need more of that. Need more of that. Need more of that. I need you to teach PowerPoint classes or something, man, because going into next semester, it's good. Summer classes, it's gonna be rough, man. The pick of the litter isn't there this time, man. I'll tell you.
I'm gonna try to be there.
Man, look, if time permits, obviously you've got your own life and whatnot, but I would love to have more classes with you. It's been a blast working with you, and it feels good to excel in a class that I went into thinking, holy shit, I'm going to botch this so bad, you
Right.
know? And it felt good to get an A in your class. And it's funny because you were the first person that submitted a grade for me. Every other grade was pending, and you were the first person that was a solid A on my Sonus. And I was like, that feels good. You know, that feels good. And I called a couple of the other people from the class. I'm like, the grade's up. What do you get? Some of them said B, some of them said B plus, whatever the case may be. I was like, I got the A though. That's what counts, you know? I was proud of myself for that because your class was the first time I panicked at coming into school. I saw the math on the board, your class and Frank's class, Frank LeBoux. I had him for the lab and I had you for the lecture. The first thing he pulls up is resistor color codes, and I'm like, cool, I'm not colorblind, I got this. And then there was math, and I'm like, holy shit, right? And then I go to your class, which was the same day in the afternoon, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe the lab will explain the lecture. And we go into it, and I'm like, it's different math. What the shit is going on, you know? And it's just, I'm panicking. I came up to you on the side. I'm like, look, is there some kind of tutoring or a cheat sheet or something? Like, I need some help here. And you were like, no, calm down. Give it a couple of weeks. Once you get into the swing of things, it'll be fine.
Basic
Yeah.
electricity is one of those classes that it can be, you know, when you get into the series circuits, the parallel circuits, and all of that, it can be daunting.
Yeah, it can be daunting. And then I remember toward the end, he put a motor on. or you put a light bulb into the parallel circuit. And I was like, it's back, the fear. It's right there again, you know? And you kind of have to take a step back, like, okay, I got this. I believe in myself. I believe in the people around me. And I guess my advice to people who might be going through it now or in the future is make friends with like-minded individuals. It's a huge help. It's a huge help to have people who are on the same wavelength as you. And for the most part, my peers in school, they're all great people, and they all seem to be succeeding at the moment, varying degrees of success, but we're all passing at the moment. And I think we kind of weeded out the bad apples off of the first semester. So I think we've got a pretty good group going right now. I think
I think so.
I think there'll be a lot of success from this year. I know one of the professors there graduated with my cousin 4 years ago. And of their class that started, their freshman class, only six people got their A&P license.
Yeah.
Only six people. And it's like, I think my group will have a couple more.
I think
We'll
so.
have a couple more. Yeah. I've met some people who have seemed very promising. Younger people, too, which is surprising. Because
Yeah.
usually you see it from the older people. But there's some little 18, 19-year-olds with their heads on straight, you know? And it's refreshing. It's surprising and refreshing to me.
Encouraging. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
So as we wrap this up, Charlie, any last thoughts or anything you wanted to tell the guests?
Go for it. Go
Yeah.
for it. Especially if you're young or younger. I am under the belief that if you feel like there's something holding you back, throw that shit in the trash. Gun it, go for it. Take a leap of faith. Aim for the sky, land amongst the clouds, you know. Even if you don't get exactly where you want to go, you can get yourself into a situation where you're comfortable and you're happy. And I'm a big proprietor of mental health, and I know that a lot of time we aren't given the chance to say, hey, I'm not okay, you know? And things like therapy cost thousands of dollars, you know? A lot of us don't have that luxury. But what we do have is time on our hands. You know, if you're younger and you're watching this, make sure you weigh all your options. If you're older, like I am, no, I say older, but you know, older than the general population. If you're older like I am, and you think you can't do it, go for it, man. Just do it, go for it, and you'd be surprised how far you can actually go. With a little bit of help from your peers, loved ones, family, friends, things like that, you'd be surprised how much easier a daunting task is when you have a foundation around you as well. So get into it, make friends, have family members that support you, significant others, mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, cousins, whatever you need, friend from high school, whatever it is, bring someone with you. We need mechanics, man. Just bring people, you know? Bring people, get people into the program. It's fantastic. It's been such fun. And I know first semester was a lot of definitions and stuff. It's a bit of a drag. It kind of puts you off to it. But once you get past that, you get into the hands-on stuff, start getting to the airframe classes, the PowerPoint classes. It's very, very fun. I think a lot of people would enjoy themselves. And there's a promise of some very, very good horizons afterwards as well. So yeah, just go for it. Believe in yourself. Believe in the people around you, and don't limit yourself. Don't limit to yourself to what you can do.
That's well said, Charlie. Listen, I want to thank Charlie so much for being on this episode of the Coder Cast. I have a feeling that he's gonna have to be on for part two at some point, but I really appreciate it.
Anytime,
And
brother.
you have to
Anytime.
just keep doing what you're doing and just believing that everything's happening for a reason and
Oh
being
yeah,
that
for sure.
positivity in everyone's
Yeah,
life that you already
absolutely.
are, you know?
Absolutely. I want to thank you for having me on real quick. Again, there's so many people you could have asked, people further along in the A&P program, your peers from work, whatever the case may be. But you chose me, a lowly second semester that's going through the program, trudging through all the trenches and whatnot. So I appreciate the chance to speak. And whenever you want me on, I'm here. I'm down.
Thanks, Charlie. Take care. We'll be seeing you guys soon.